The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter number 10, texts number 1 and 2, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on April 19th, 2010, in Kaunas, Lithuania.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, a new chapter today, chapter 10. Texts number 1 and 2. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Te Vasudevaya. Sri Shuka Uvacha Atha Sindhu Savira Pate Rahu Ganasya Rajata Ikshu Matyas Tate Tatkula Patina Shivika Vaha Purusho Shasvashena Samaye Devino pasadita hassa dvijavara upalabja esha piva yuva sanghayanana gogo karavad duram vodum alam iti purva vishti grihitai sahagrihitai prasobam ata arha uvaha shivikangsa mahanubhavaha. Yadahi dvija vareshyeshu Matravalo kanugater na samahita purusha gatis tada vishamagatam svashibikam rahugana upadharaya purusham adi vahata ahohe vodora sadvati kramata kim itsi vishamang uhute yanam iti. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Shukadev Goswami said, "My dear king, after this, King Rahugana, ruler of the states known as Sindhu and Salvira, was going to Kapilashram. When the king's chief palanquin carriers reached the banks of the river Ikshumati, they needed another carrier. Therefore, they began searching for someone, and by chance they came upon Jadbharat. They considered the fact that Jadbharat was very young and strong and had firm limbs. Like cows and asses, he was quite fit to carry loads. Thinking in this way, although the great soul Jadbharat was unfit for such work, they nonetheless unhesitatingly forced him to carry the palanquin. The palanquin, however, was very erratically carried by Jadbharat, due to his sense of nonviolence. As he stepped forward, he checked before him every 3 feet to see whether he was about to step on ants. Consequently, he could not keep pace with the other carriers. And due to this, the palanquin was shaking, and King Rahugana immediately asked the carriers, 'Why are you carrying this palanquin unevenly? Better carry it properly.'" Purport. Although Jadbharat was forced to carry the palanquin, he did not give up his sympathetic feelings toward the poor ants passing on the road. A devotee of the Lord does not forget his devotional service and other favorable activities, even when he is in a most distressful condition. Jadbharat was a qualified Brahmin, highly elevated in spiritual knowledge, yet he was forced to carry the palanquin. He did not mind this, but while walking on the road, he could not forget his duty to avoid killing even an ant. A Vaishnava is never envious or unnecessarily violent. There were many ants on the path, but Jadbharat took care by looking ahead 3 feet. When the ants were no longer in his way, he would place his foot on the ground. A Vaishnava is always very kind at heart to all living entities. In his Sankhya Yoga, Lord Kapiladev explains, Suhrida Sarvadehinam. living entities assume different bodily forms. Those who are not Vaishnavas consider only human society worthy of their sympathy. But Krishna claims to be the supreme father of all life forms. Consequently, the Vaishnava takes care not to annihilate untimely or unnecessarily any life form. All living entities have to fulfill a certain duration for being encaged in a particular type of material body. They have to finish the duration allotted a particular body before being promoted or evolved to another body. Killing an animal or any other living being simply places an impediment in the way of his completing his term of imprisonment in a certain body. One should therefore not kill bodies for one's sense gratification, for this will implicate one in sinful activity.
Shri Guru Shri Jata Barakamala Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raghunatan Vita Tam Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha.
This is quite a scene, if you can imagine. This is quite an amazing pastime. They were missing one palanquin carrier short for the king's palanquin. So they grabbed Jadbharat. All he's looking very stout and strong. But the only problem was he was a Vaishnava. He had no problem carrying the palanquin. But he had a problem with being negligent as he was walking down the road. He did not want to harm even a little ant. This reminds us of the pastime of Murghari the hunter also. He is famous for not wanting to hurt even a little ant. So, the king is not used to having this kind of palanquin carrier. The king is not accustomed to having this sort of palanquin carrier. He wants to stop every 3 feet to look for ants. The other palanquin carriers had no problem stepping on ants. They didn't care. But this one, he wants to stop every 3 feet and look for ants. So this means they weren't in step. You know, normally they're in step. They fly, walk together, step, 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 step. But now here's one of the three who's out of step, stopping, looking for an end. So it created a very bumpy ride for the king. And he was rather agitated. And that will be discussed in further Bhagavatam classes. How the king chastised Jadbhara for his erratic palanquin carrying. But Jadbhara was not thinking he was a sudra who has to take the chastisement from the king. He's a fully realized brahmana. So when the king chastised him, he chastised the king and convinced the king that he was right. So you're in for, it's a very interesting chapter. It's one of the most interesting chapters in this chapter we're starting now. This conversation between Jadbhara and Maharaj Rahugan is one of the most interesting chapters in the entire Bhagavatam. So we encourage everyone to attend all the classes that are coming up, because it's really going to be, it's really amazing. In this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada is focusing on the non-violent nature of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is naturally sympathetic. Vidya vanaya sampane brahmane gavihashtani shuni chayavas papake cha panditas samadarshinaha. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog-eater outcast. I think that's 518. You can check 518.
Langus išminčiai, tik raždama dėka vienodai žvelgia į mokytą, romų brahmaną, į kalinę, drambulį šunį, bei šunį.
So, he sees everyone as his brother.
Bet jis mato visus kaip savo brolius.
Because Krishna is the father of all living entities.
Nes Krishna yra visų gyvų būtybių tėvas.
Would you want to step on your little brother and kill him?
Norėtumėte užlipti ant savo mažą broliuką ir jį nužudyti?
Of course not.
Ne.
Every living entity is seen as a family member by a Vaishnava. If there is necessity, one may kill. But if it's not necessary, one should definitely not do. Because unnecessarily killing other living entities brings karmic reactions. In other words, if you unnecessarily kill ants, then you have to become an ant and be killed by that very ant that killed you, that you killed.
Yeah.
So one should always be as gentle as possible to all living creatures. As it is said, what goes around comes around. If I commit violence to other living beings, that violence will come back to me. This is the law of karma. This is the principle taught by Lord Buddha. Therefore, a true Buddhist must be vegetarian. He must practice ahimsa or non-violence. One cannot be a meat eater and be a Buddhist. It's not possible. Because Buddha appeared simply for the purpose of stopping the meat eating. So, if we can adopt this non-violent lifestyle, following in the footsteps of great sages like Judd Barrett, by not causing unnecessary disturbance to other living beings, this will put us into a peaceful state of mind. In other words, if you act violently towards others, your mind cannot be peaceful. You'll have a disturbed mind. You won't be able to absorb your mind in the holy name of the Lord. Therefore, for chanting, regulated activities are required. One has to give up illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, because these activities pollute the mind. They induce lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. So therefore, one should be very careful to strictly follow these regulated principles. And then, when you chant Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, you will be able to deeply absorb yourself in the Lord's transcendental names. And by that deep absorption, you will feel the sweetest happiness. You will revive your actual eternal spiritual nature, which is situated far beyond all the sufferings of this material existence. I mean, what intelligent person would want to unnecessarily suffer? Would you like to suffer? If I gave you suffering, what would you say? Give me suffering. Is it? Does anybody want to suffer? But yet, by foolishness, because of lust, we engage in so many activities that force us to suffer. That force us to suffer. Therefore, the intelligent person curbs down this enemy in the form of lust. Curbs it down, defeats. He defeats lust by strictly following regulated principles and absorbing himself and chanting the holy names of the Lord. This brings him the greatest happiness. It frees him from all anxiety. It gives him the ability to purely love other people in all forms. Ants are also people. They have a jiva soul just like you do. Every single living being is a person, just like you are a person. In fact, we were all ants in a previous lifetime. Now we've been elevated to the human life. So we should not cause unnecessary suffering to any creature. The spark of divinity is there in every living creature, because everyone is within God and God is within everyone. So therefore we have to respect that divine nature of all living beings, especially those living beings who have taken to the path of Krishna consciousness. They must be given the highest respect. They are called the Vaishnavas. the devotees of the Lord. But actually everyone is a Vaishnava. They have simply forgotten, that's all. Jivara Sarupa Hai Krishnara Anuchita. The constitutional position of every single living entity is that he is the eternal servant of Krishna. So therefore we should be very kind to everyone. We should tell them about Krishna. We should help them remember who they really are. That they are not their body. That they are the eternal spirit soul. And that they are indeed the eternal servants of Krishna. And that they are, in truth, the eternal servants of Krishna. This is called love. This is called human life. A real human life means to give Krishna to others. That is human life. If we don't give them Krishna, what are we doing? We are killing them. If you don't make yourself Krishna conscious, what are you doing? You're committing suicide. So therefore, we should do everything we can to revive our Krishna consciousness and the Krishna consciousness of others. This is the true meaning of brotherhood. This is the true meaning of friendship. This is the true meaning of love. This is the true meaning of peace. This is the true meaning of happiness. We try to enjoy happiness in various ways in this world. But what is the result of our attempts to be happy? We're still miserable. So instead of foolishly trying to be happy in the wrong way, by gratifying our material senses, we should intelligently be happy in the way which can be really happy. By giving pleasure to Krishna or God. It is a simple psychology. Every part of your body requires food, isn't it? Nutrition is required by every part of your body. Just like I have some problem with my hearing, and I am in consulting now with a hearing specialist who explains that actually one of the major reasons that people have so many hearing problems in our society is improper nutrition. In societies who eat a traditional, you know, organic raw, you know, organic food from the earth, the old people have, their hearing is as sharp as the young people. So the point is, every part of the body requires nutrition. The ears, the eyes, every part of the body requires nutrition. So how do you give those nutrients to your bodily parts? Do you fill a bathtub up with rice and roll around in the rice? To get that nutrition to all your bodily parts? Or do you dip? You roll around in a bathtub full of halava to get nutrition? No, you feed your belly. By putting the food in your belly, then every part of your body becomes nourished. Does anybody feed their bodily parts separately? Do you know anyone who does that? Do you know any doctor who prescribes that you should feed your bodily parts separately? No. The standard system is you put the food in your mouth, it goes to your belly. And then the belly distributes that nutritional value to every single part of your body. So, if we, in the same way, if we give our loving service to God, He is like the universal belly. When you give your loving service to God, then that loving service goes to all living beings. So, this is the perfection of love. This is the only way we can really, truly love. By giving our love to God. I may try to love you, you may try to love me separately from loving God. But what will be the nature of that love? Selfish. I will think, well, let me give service to you so I can get something. Let me give to you so I get something out of you in return. I'll scratch your back if you scratch my back. You see, so-called love in this world is just it's a deal for mutual sense gratification, that's all. As long as you gratify my senses, I'll gratify yours. And if you don't gratify my senses anymore, then I have no interest in gratifying yours anymore. When you're a young, beautiful girl, then yeah, I want you. And you become an old, dried-up woman, though, who cares?
See?
This is lust. This is not love, you see. Genuine love means giving without any thought in return. So the perfection of that love is to give love to God. And by giving that love to God, everyone is part of God. So when I give perfect love to God, then I can perfectly love you. And because I am also part of God, and I perfectly love myself also. So in Krishna consciousness, you do not become neglected. You give the best love to yourself, the best love to your wife, the best love to your husband, the best love to your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your neighbors, your community. So Krishna consciousness is the perfection of existence. The whole world is suffering at the present moment due to a lack of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, our mission is we want to teach everybody in the whole world how to be Krishna conscious. Because that will solve all the problems both individually and collectively. Everybody will become happy. That means you too. Even if you're miserable and depressed, if you take to Krishna consciousness, you'll be overflowing with joy. You'll have so much joy in your heart, it'll be more than you can even enjoy. Therefore, you'll have to do something with all that joy. You'll have to preach. Jaritaika tarika Krishna Buddhesha Mara Gaya Guru Hoya Tare Desh. Whoever you meet, instruct him in the teachings of Krishna. In this way, on my order, you become guru and deliver the people of this country. Lord Chaitanya has ordered every one of us to become guru by teaching the science of Krishna to everyone we meet. So if we will take this mood of Lord Chaitanya of giving Krishna to everybody, what will be our position? As I have many times explained, the more you give Krishna, the more you get Krishna. So that means the more you are dedicated to giving Krishna to others, to that extent Krishna will be your personal property. Therefore the intelligent devotee fully dedicates his life to making the whole world Krishna conscious, because he knows that's how I can possess Krishna. If I fully dedicate my life to making the whole world Krishna conscious, then Krishna can never leave me. He'll have to sit in my heart at every minute, blessing me with unlimited mercy. So now I can ask if there's any question.
You said that if you want to love somebody, first we should love God. I know one example when one man comes to Prabhupada and he said that he want to love God. Prabhupada asked him if he was loving somebody, and he said that no, I was not in love in anybody. And Prabhupada said that.
No. Tas žmogus sakė, kad ne, Prabhupada, jūs mane nesupratot, man domina ne materiali meilė, aš noriu dvasinio aukštumų, į ką Prabhupada pasakė, aš ir kalbu apie dvasinės aukštumus, ar to, kad ką nors jis jie plamai mylėjasi, sako, ne, ir Prabhupada jį išvarė. Nes...
This man said that he don't need material love, he wants spiritual love. And Prabhupada asked him if he was loving anybody, and he answer that no, so Prabhupada said that I cannot help you.
Where did you hear then?
Nancy. I'm not remember.
Yeah, I never heard that either. I'm not sure if it's a bona fide story or not. It doesn't sound like something that Prabhupada would say. So I would, since we don't know where it came from, I would doubt the authenticity of that story. Because that was not Prabhupada's mood, that I cannot help you. Prabhupada's mood was to help everybody.
Prabhupada wanted to explain that if you want to have spiritual love, you have to have some experience of material love, and this man not agree many times, and Prabhupada say, so I cannot help you.
Well, if somebody is not willing to hear submissively, yeah, then we can't help them, that's true. If someone has their own idea and they don't want to take any training, obviously we can't help them. We want to help them. We can give them help, but they're not taking the help. If they don't want to take the help, we give it to them, but if they don't take it, what we can do? That's a fact. There's a saying in English, you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't make him drink. So we can give a man all good instructions. Try our level best to help him. But he doesn't take that help, what we can do? We can't force him to be Krishna conscious. That's a valid point.
But I have in mind, šita idėja neprieštarauja, kad Prabhupada norėjo duoti pavyzdį per tai, kad iš pradžių jis turėtų pamilti kažkokį žmogų ir paskui suprasti, kad reikia pamilti, kaip jis galėtų pamilti Dievą paskui per tai. O mokytojas sakė, kad jeigu tu nori pamilti visus, iš pradžių turi pamilti Dievą.
So if you want to love God, should we first love somebody else or we should learn to love God, to learn to love anybody else?
Well, there's different ways of answering that question. I think you might like to hear this example from the Nectar Devotion. You see, in the beginning, a little baby, he loves only his tongue. Everything is something to put in his mouth, his mother's breath. And he puts his mouth on other things also to see if he can get something good out of it. You see? So for a little baby, he has one love only, and that's his tongue. His first love is gratifying his tongue. See? And then he grows up a little bit, and he starts to eat regular food, solid food. And then sometimes he may share some food with his little brother. See? So now his love is expanded from his tongue to include his little brother is also included in his circle of love. So his circle of love is his tongue is still there, of course, the brother, his parents. And then he grows up a little bit more. He finds out he has some people living next door. There's some neighbors next door. So he learns how to love his neighbors. His circle of love gets a little wider and includes the neighbors. And then there's a whole town, Kaunas, you see. His circle of love grows to Kaunas. And then it all of Lithuania, you see. His circle of love gets bigger, you see. And then all of Europe. And all of then the whole planet. And then all the living entities, not only humans, but he realizes he has to love the animals too. But when his circle of love becomes perfect, then it goes all the way to Krishna. So there is a sense of love there, even a little child loving his tongue. And that love, that circle of love has to expand all the way to Krishna, and until then it remains imperfect. Maybe that helps you to understand. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Trying to serve God, but I cannot find that I love everybody. So this love is not manifested because I still have no love for God, or why?
Yes.
If they sing it.
Because we are not perfect in loving God, therefore we don't feel love for all of His parts and parcels. So you have to try harder to become more Krishna conscious. And as your Krishna consciousness expands, your love for all living creatures will expand proportionately. That's why the highest level of it is Uttamadhikari, you see. His heart bleeds with compassion to see the suffering of the human society. And he fully dedicates his whole life for making the whole world Krishna conscious. So in the beginning, we are Kanishta Adhikari. We just think, what can I get out of this for myself? But then gradually we become Madhyama Adhikari. We learn how to love the devotees, to be and preach Krishna consciousness message for the benefit of others. And then gradually we transform into Uttamadhikari devotees. who are compassionate to all living beings. That's the progressive march of Krishna consciousness. Your advancement can be seen how much you love other living entities, actually. That's one way of measuring your Krishna consciousness. How much are you feeling compassion for other living beings? Because that is a natural symptom of one who is Krishna conscious. Does that answer your question? Yes.
What to do? Any instruction I took as violence to me. Any instruction I take as violent.
You take what is violence?
Instructions.
Instruction is violence?
Yes, in everywhere. If somebody just tried to instruct me somehow.
You take it like that? Do you take instructions as violence? Well, in this material world, 99.9999% of the instructions are violence. Because there's a saying in English, misery enjoys company. So everybody is miserable. And they want to keep you in the same misery that they're in, so they have some company. So they instruct you in such a way that you can remain in misery with them. So 99.999% of the instructions you get are violence. They're meant to keep you in misery. But when you come in contact with a pure devotee, that's the 0.00001%. The pure devotee's instruction, they are pure love. Because they pull you out of this violent world in which you are trapped in the present time. So therefore we should seek out the shelter and association of a pure devotee. His instructions are not violent. His instructions are the perfection of non-violence. Does that answer your question?
It's okay if pure devotee, but if some other Vaishnava who is not pure gives some instructions, orders to me. Not instructions, but orders.
Yeah. Well, one has to be intelligent enough to judge properly. Is this instruction given with a pure heart? Or is it given with an exploitative heart? So how do you judge that? You have to see, is this judgment in accordance with Prabhupada's teaching? Is this instruction in accordance with Prabhupada's teachings? Or is it contrary to Prabhupada's teachings? In other words, Prabhupada can speak through us. We are giving instructions according to the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, those instructions are pure. And if we give instructions which are against Prabhupada's instructions, those instructions are impure. This principle is a very most important principle for the leaders of ISKCON to be constantly aware of. The gurus, GBCs, sannyasis, temple presidents. They have to be very conscious when they give instructions. Am I repeating the instructions of Srila Prabhupada? Or am I doing something which instructing something which is against Srila Prabhupada's instructions? Because if I'm instructing against what Prabhupada is giving, then I'm committing violence also. Just like, for example, I'm a spiritual master. I have disciples all over the world. Every day they write me with so many different questions. I have to be very, and also when I meet them, just like, you know, when I meet them when I'm traveling, they come for darshan, they ask for so many instructions. So I have to be very, very careful. Everything, every instruction I give has to be confirmed by Prabhupada's books. I cannot give an instruction which is contradicts Prabhupada's instruction. If I do so, then I'm not acting as a bona fide spiritual master. So, my best suggestion to you then is you carefully read Prabhupada's books. When I first joined this movement, that was my mood. Because in the class, so many teachings were given. And I didn't know. I said, well, I don't know if this is bona fide or not. I have to read it in Prabhupada's books before I'll accept it. So that was my mood when I joined this movement. To become very learned in Prabhupada's teachings. So that whatever teaching or instruction I heard or was given, I could confirm that it was bona fide or not bona fide. One time my temple president told me, the chalk, you know, for writing on a chalkboard, chalk, on a blackboard writing with chalk. I said, Prabhu, we need some more chalk. Can we buy some more chalk? The temple has run out of chalk. And he told me, well, go to the university campus and steal some chalk from one of the rooms. And I was thinking, what kind of nonsense is this? Prabhupada had personally told me in one letter, we shouldn't steal anything. Now my temple president is telling me to go steal some chalk from the university. It's so inexpensive item. It's not a big deal, you know. A little chalk is just a few pennies, you know. He wants me to go walk all the way to the university and sneak into a classroom and steal some chalk from the classroom? That's a ridiculous instruction. So I wrote my GBC, complained about it. This temple president told me to steal chalk. I complained to the GBC. And the GBC said, you're right. So we should not just be blindly accept whatever instructions were given. We should know what Prabhupada wants. And we should be able to judge whatever instruction am I given. Is it in accordance with the Prabhupada's teachings or it's something against Prabhupada's teachings? So whatever is in accordance with the Prabhupada's teachings, you should follow that. And if it's against Prabhupada's teachings, you can ignore it. And then you're okay. Because you've taken shelter of Prabhupada. You've taken shelter of his teachings. And you know his books because you've read them carefully. And then you're always on the safe side. I even tell my disciples, if I deviate from Prabhupada, don't listen to me. That's my order to all of my disciples. If I ever deviate from Prabhupada's teachings, you should try to save me from Maya. Just as I am helping you in your Krishna consciousness, if I ever deviate from Prabhupada's teachings, then you should try to save me from being in Maya. So Prabhupada's books are the law books for this society, ISKCON movement. You just always see that you're lined up with Prabhupada's teachings. And then you will always be properly situated. Does that answer your question?
Partially.
All right, what's the rest? What's unanswered? Now tell me what's not answered.
There are people who like to control. I also like to control, and I don't like if somebody wants to control me.
You're
exploiting. This is exploitation.
That's a fact. Nobody likes to be controlled. Nobody likes to control. So what to do? What's the solution? Well, I can tell you the solution is this. You have to agree to be controlled by Krishna. Do you? Let me ask you personally. Do you agree to be controlled by Krishna? Yes or no? Huh?
I don't know.
Wait. You don't know. All right. So, if you don't agree to be controlled by Krishna, that means you want to control Krishna. So, wait. You're next. Let me just finish. I'm on a train of thought, Devi. Let me finish my train of thought. So, you have a desire to control Krishna? All right. That's not a problem. The way to control Krishna is by love. If you agree to be completely controlled by Krishna, you become a completely sold-out pure devotee of Krishna. Krishna will reciprocate with your complete surrender unto Him by agreeing. He will fully surrender to you also. Just as He surrendered to Mother Yashoda, and He surrendered to Arjuna by being the chariot driver. So if you have a desire to control God, then you must know what is the technique for controlling God. And that is by complete surrender to God. He will become under your control. So there's the solution for you. If you want to control God, you place yourself fully under God's control, and then He will agree to be controlled by you. Does that answer your question? It does. Oh, very good. Now you... Your point. Yes, I want to be the controller. But when nature calls, I have to run to the toilet room. What sort of controller is that? I control my bowels and my bladder. Is it? What kind of controller we can be in this world? The dog, he may think, yes, I want to be a big controller. You make me king. Give me a crown and give me a throne. I will be king. But as soon as you throw a bone on the floor, you see, and that dog, he will jump off the throne and run after that bone, you see. Because the dog is controlled by his tongue. You see? So you want to be controller. Then you become actual controller. Vatsa vegam manasakroda vegam jivan vegam yudharopasta vegam etan veham vishahet dira sravam ipimam pribivim jishishyad. You become the actual controller. One who can conquer mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals can make disciples all over the world. So you want to be controller? You become actual controller. Control your mind. Control your anger. Control your words. Control your tongue. Control your belly. Control your genitals. And then you will become Goswami. Or in your case, Goswamini. You see? You want to be controller? We want controllers in this movement. We want Goswamis. We will give you all training how you can become controller, perfect controller, by mastering all of your senses. Next question.
What I should be, that Krishna be most happy to see me.
Become a pure devotee. Is that all right?
I'm getting
so simply. So difficult. So simply and very
difficult. So simple and so difficult.
Yes. So take the simple side and give up the difficult side. Make it easy on yourself. Actually, it's more easy to be Krishna conscious than it is to be in Maya. It's only because of the mind we think otherwise. So stop listening to your mind. Listen to Sri Guru and listen to Sri Krishna. That's all. Ignore your mind. And you'll see it's the most easy thing in the world is to be pure devotee. There's nothing easier than being a pure devotee of Krishna. But the only difficulty is we keep listening to that mind, you see. We're being henpecked by the rascal mind. Henpecked? Like a henpecked husband? We're being henpecked by the rascal mind, you see. So don't allow yourself to be henpecked anymore. Don't be the henpecked husband of your mind anymore, you see. You simply hear Guru and Krishna. You follow their orders, bas. And then you see how easy it is to be a pure devotee. It's the easiest thing in the whole world to be a pure devotee of Krishna. Next question. Computer question.
What is one of the devotees is nothing being sincere and pretends to be a monk for his own benefit? How do you, as a spiritual master, act?
What is it? What's the point?
Jeigu kuris nors atsidavęs, vienuolis, apsimeta atsidavusiu ir elgiasi tam tik tai dėl savo jūsminio pasitenkimo, kaip jūs kaip dvasinis mokytojas turėtumėte elgtis?
If one devotee...
If one...
What is one of the devotees is not being sincere and pretends to be a monk for his own benefit? How do you as a spiritual master act?
What if one wants to be a devotee for their own benefit?
Is that word?
One if one acts as a monk for his own benefit?
Yes. And how do you act as a spiritual master?
How do I as a spiritual master relate to him? Or is he saying the spiritual master is acting as a monk for his own benefit?
No, how you should act.
How one should act.
How you should act. How spiritual master should act.
So he's not doing it for his own benefit?
If somebody...
Is the person, he's saying the guru is the one who's doing it for his own benefit? Oh, how he should train that person? Okay, all right. Because it takes a different meaning, you know. If he's accusing the guru of doing that, that's one thing. But he's saying, how can the guru train that person properly? Is that the, what is this question? I can handle it either way, no problem. Is he saying, is the guru the one who's acting that way, or he wants to know how the guru will train that person? Which way is it?
It was like pointing a finger.
Is he pointing a finger at the guru? Okay, good, I can handle that. If you're saying, well, I think that you're acting as a spiritual master just for your own benefit. I think you have some motive. I think you're after money. I think you're after women. I think you're after followers. You see, one can accuse a spiritual master like that. Lord Chaitanya said, Nadanam najanam nasunganim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhaktira haitakitvaya. He says, I have no desire for wealth. I have no desire for women, nor do I have any desire for followers. I don't even want liberation. I simply want devotional service. So someone may accuse the spiritual master, I don't think you're sincere. I think you're doing this due to material motivations. So what then would the spiritual master say? If he is accused of insincerity, actually the spiritual master does not consider that he's a spiritual master. He simply considers himself to be the humble servant of his spiritual master. He doesn't claim any wealth for himself. He doesn't claim any women or any followers as for himself. He simply accepts this service on the order of his spiritual master. Our only desire was to serve Prabhupada's instructions, that's all. But he gave us the instruction that we should also become spiritual masters. So if your spiritual master orders you to become a spiritual master, it is your duty to carry out his order. If one does not carry out his order, then one is disobeying one's spiritual master. If one disobeys one's spiritual master, he goes to hell. So I have to admit I have some self-interest in not going to hell.
Wait.
He what? He clarified the question? Okay. All right.
He clarified the question. How the spiritual master will deal with such a student who is pretending.
That's what he really meant.
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I can deal with that one too. Because the spiritual master knows the art of purely engaging in Krishna's service without any material motivations. He is empowered by Krishna to help his students do the same thing. First of all, he shows the perfect example. And the Prabhupada is the perfect example of this. When he was first offered a Vyasasan in Los Angeles, he started crying. He said, "I am not fit to sit on this exalted seat. But I'm doing so on behalf of my spiritual master." So by his example, he taught all of us, his disciples, how to never feel that we're worthy of any position, and how to always be in the mood of being a humble servant. So the spiritual master, he has learned this art from his spiritual master, how never to take a position for sense enjoyment, but to only accept a position for the purpose of service. In this way, one becomes perfect. The same thing applies if you become a husband or you become a wife. You see, Lord Shabadev, he instructs that one should not take any position of responsibility unless you're doing so to save your dependence from birth and death. So one should not take the position of monk for one's sense gratification. One should only take the position of monk for the sake of serving others, to deliver them from birth and death. So the spiritual master, he can study the hearts of his students. He can see when they're acting on the platform of material motivation. And therefore he chastises them according in an appropriate way to help them give up this false mentality. Does that answer his question? Did they respond? Did they answer the question? They said yes? Okay, very good. Okay. All right, so our time has gone way over time. And so now we're getting ready to head out to Latvia. And depending on the volcanic ash cloud floating over Europe, we don't know how long we'll be in Latvia. But in any case, our hearts will always be here with all of you here in Lithuania. And we request that while we are apparently gone, that you kindly cultivate the mood of pure devotion. Carefully read Srila Prabhupada's books. Carefully follow the instructions in Srila Prabhupada's books. And in this way, you will develop pure devotion. Continue to expand the loving relationships between the devotees, so that everybody who comes in contact with this family of devotees will feel encouraged to become a pure devotee. In this way, keep increasing the bhakti mood in this community. So that when we come back in October, by whatever means, I mean, we'll have to take a ship if the ash cloud is still there, but somehow we'll get here. By ship or by train, we'll get here. So then we come back in October. We will see how much you've expanded the mood of bhakti here in this community. How are you all becoming pure devotees? And how you're attracting more and more people to take up the path of pure bhakti. So in this may make a big, big revolution for Prabhupada here in Lithuania. And we will have, my Vyas Puja will again be celebrated this year. Kedarnath Prabhu requested, and we will have my Vyasa Puja here when we come back. So we thank you very much. So we're not really leaving. Don't think we're leaving. Mataji and I are captured by your love. We can never set a foot outside of Lithuania. It's only apparently that we're captured by your love. But we're only apparently leaving. We're not actually leaving. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Gandharāj Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna. Achula Bhai.